seen then actually other examples of truly two-dimensional materials appear. So those include various graphene multilayers. Which can have very, very different physical properties. And then more recently, materials like molybdenum S2, and there are certain other examples. And so this was the first reason why it was such a big surprise. But also another very interesting thing about this material is that quasiparticles in this material are Dirac-like low energy excitations. And this is really different from the usual metals and semiconductors where electrons are essentially non-relativistic with the usual quadratic energy dispersion. Okay, so this actually gives rise to many new physical effects, and so we will discuss a small number of them, hopefully already in today's lecture. And so this stimulated a lot of interest, a lot of experimental studies, but also a lot of theoretical works about materials with unusual dispersion relations, right? So since then, several other materials which have Dirac-like excitations were discovered. So those include three-dimensional topological insulators, topological insulators which are gapped in the bulk, but have a single species Dirac fermion living on the surface, right? And moreover, there are many interesting ideas about, you know, what happens if you have Dirac-like excitations in three-dimensional materials. So, for example, there is a lot of interest now in the class of materials called vial semimetals, so which are three-dimensional materials, right? And those are just this is just one of the examples. So, but let us start gradually. So let's start by understanding the band structure, electronic band structure of graphene. And so, as far as I understand, you guys learned it in some form, right? In the previous, I guess in the lectures that Dennis gave. So let's go rather quickly, just so that we established some notations, right? So essentially a good approximation to the band structure of graphene is given by just the nearest neighbor tight binding model, right? So we assume that there are hops just between nearest neighbors, and so later on we will briefly discuss what happens if you have other terms in the band structure, and we will think about it in terms of tight binding model. Now, so I'll have in my tight binding Hamiltonian, I'll have a sum over nearest neighbors, and an important thing here is that honeycomb lattice has two atoms per unit cell, right? So I can introduce two sublattices A and B, right, which involve atoms of each kind, okay, and each sublattice is essentially Bravais triangular lattice. Okay. So as usual, so we can go to K space. Right, so we would consider we will introduce operators which create electrons with quasi momentum k on either sublattice. Right, and here Ri is just the position of the ith atom, and so atoms of the b sublattice are shifted compared to the atoms of the a sublattice by one of the three vectors, so e1, e3, e2. Okay, so in the sum, I must have this shift here. Right, which correspond to this different position, in the K space, my Hamiltonian is going to become diagonal, but of course it's a 2x2 matrix because I have two atoms per unit cell. Okay, and from these expressions, I can immediately write the form of this matrix. So HK is simply so it only has off diagonal elements because for now we don't have any hops between AA sites or BB sites. And here T of K is hopping times the following sum. Right, so here I need to sum over vectors which connect a given A site to its three neighbors living on the B sublattice. So now, turns out that this quantity T of K, so first of all, it gives us directly the dispersion relation, right? So if I find the spectrum of this matrix, I'll get that I have two bands, conduction and valence band, and essentially which are symmetric. Around zero, right? And the energy is just given by the absolute value of this quantity T of K. Now, what you find out if you study this quantity is that T of K has zeros in some places in the Brillouin zone. Okay, so let's find where this quantity vanishes. Right, so let's draw our Brillouin zone. So in this case, so we are dealing with a triangular lattice. So the Brillouin zone must be a hexagon. Okay, so it has six-fold rotational symmetry. Turns out that you can find solution of this equation for k which is sitting on the kx axis. Okay, so then if you plug in such a k, then you find that T of k is T 1 plus kx plus e to the I square root 3 over 2 a kx, right? So here a is just the length of the vector which connects two nearest neighbors. So it's a lattice constant, right? So then I can just write it as t 1 plus 2 cosine square root 3 over 2 akx. And I immediately find that it would be 0 when square root 3 over 2 akx is plus minus 2 pi over 3. Right? So let me call this critical value capital K. Okay? So K equals plus minus 4 pi over 3 square root 3a. Turns out that these points are actually the corners of the Brillouin zone. Okay? And the rotational symmetry of the Brillouin zone also tells you that T of k should vanish at all six corners. Now, thing to keep in mind is that, in fact, not all of these corners are independent, right? So it turns out that some of them are in fact equivalent because they're related by a reciprocal lattice vector, right? So these three, for example, right, are actually the same point, and so are these three. Okay, so this tells you that you have only two independent nodes. So for example, I could pick them, you know, as this one and this one. And let me call these points k and k prime. So now, what is also important to realize is that this band structure is quite symmetric. So in particular, it has, right, so symmetries. In particular, it obeys particle Hall symmetry. Which is actually what any bipartite lattice with hops between two sublattices obeys, right? And the symmetry is essentially the following. So if you find some solution uk vk with energy epsilon of k, right, then acting with the third Pauli matrix on this solution, you get also a solution, but with energy minus epsilon k, right? And then you can simply check by checking that sigma z hk sigma z equals minus hk. Okay? So now, of course, another symmetry is the time reversal symmetry, right? So, and we will use this fact later. So, but as a next step, let's find, you know, we found that there are the zero energy states. So let's find what happens if you move slightly away from these points. And that we can do by just looking again at the expression for T of k. So let's, for example, let's first consider the k point, right? So let's consider momentum which is close to this k point. Okay, so and by close I mean that the deviation from the of the quasi-momentum from this point must be much less than essentially 1 over a. Okay, because this is my only scale in the problem, right? So in the Brillouin zone, things vary on the scale which is roughly 1 over a. Okay, so and then I can just look at my expression for T of k, okay, and right, so then I can say that. So first I write it exactly without approximations, and then as the next step I'm going to expand it in the small deviations. Okay, so then I expand to the linear order in delta k, and so and what I obtain after after some simple simple manipulations is this. Right, so it goes as a essentially as a complex momentum, so to say. Right, so which tells me that h k plus delta k, I can write it in the following form. So let me introduce velocity, and so I will relate it to the hopping matrix element which I missed here, and to the lattice spacing in a second. Right, so here I should write like this, and here I would just write the complex conjugate of this guy. And so, and I can rewrite it in terms of Pauli matrices. Right, so delta kx is multiplied by the first one, and delta ky is multiplied by the second one. Okay, so this is how our Dirac-like Hamiltonian emerges. And so in here, the effective Fermi velocity, if you do this expansion, you find that it's equal 3/2 TA. Okay, and if you plug in the numbers for the carbon-carbon bond, what you find is that this velocity is roughly 10 to the 6 meters per second. Okay. Okay. This expansion. Okay. Yeah, very good. So first of all, so let's start from the beginning, right? So first of all, the HK, right? So you should think about it. You should think about this Hamiltonian. Essentially, why is it 2x2, right? This is because I have two sublattices. So I need to keep track of the wave function amplitudes on the sublattice A and B, right? And this Hamiltonian acts in this space, right? Now, recall that when I was thinking about this state binding model, right, I only consider hops between A and B sublattices, right? So there are no hops between A and A sublattices. So this tells you that, okay, this should be zero, right? Because if I start from A sublattice, I cannot stay there. But there are hops between A and B, right, which exactly correspond to this off diagonal matrix elements. Okay, so now UK and VK, right? So this is just a notation I introduced. So this would be some solution of this Hamiltonian, some eigenstate, right? So and again, it should be a spinner, right? And so I mean here I don't even need to know the precise form of these guys, right? All I need to know is that there is a solution, and then I by showing this commutation relation, I can, you know, immediately see that sigma z acting on the spinner would be also a solution, but essentially would correspond to a hole, right? It would have the opposite energy. Yeah. And now what I'm trying to do next, right? So working directly with this Hamiltonian, it's possible, but it's not optimal, right? Because ideally, you know, I want to have some kind of low energy theory, right, which describes my quasi particles, right? So now, you know, if you think about it, particle hole symmetry of the dispersion and the fact that you have you're at half filling, right? Because in here you have one electron per site, right? And electrons have two spin species, right? So which tells you that exactly half the states in the Brillouin zone would be filled, right? So this tells you that the chemical potential would be at zero, right? And we also found that the dispersion vanishes at these two points, right? So now I know that my low energy excitations would live near these points, right? And I want to, you know, I want to understand what they would be. Now, of course, you could, you know, you could argue, you could say, okay, you know, most likely it's since there is particle hole symmetry and it vanishes there, they must have linear dispersion and they must be Dirac-like. So, but this is true, but you know, there are examples where it's actually not true, right? So you could have, for example, materials where dispersion is not this, right, but something like this, right? So where you have two parabolic bands which are touching at the point and which are symmetric, right? So and this in fact happens in, you know, in various systems, you know, most importantly in bilayer graphene, right? So this, you know, this exercise is not pointless, so we'll indeed convince ourselves that the dispersion is linear and the Hamiltonian is Dirac-like. Yes, yes, exactly, yeah. Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so from this we see immediately that the dispersion near the K point is linear, right, in the lowest order. So, right, so let me write it as a. Like that. Right, so it's really this one. So second question, we could ask what happens in the other node, right? This is where time reversal symmetry is useful. So we could, you know, if we have some solution UK VK, right, near one of these points, right, then we know that by time reversal symmetry, by taking complex conjugate, we can get a solution in the other point, right. I so need to conjugate, and if you do that, you can if you take this into account, you can immediately write the effective Hamiltonian in the K prime point from knowing this one. Okay, so and what you got is write it here. So K prime point right, so it looks very similar, except you find that you need to change the relative sign of the two Pauli matrices here. Okay. So which tells you that the two species of Dirac quasiparticles should have opposite chiralities here. So, okay, so now we have an understanding of what our dispersion looks like, right? So if I look at the dispersion, let's say as a function of kx, Right, so let me take a slice, right? Let me put ky equal to zero and let me take a slice of the dispersion. Then I have two of these k points, right, where dispersion is linear. And then of course they should connect at high or low energies, right, in the Brillouin zone. Right, and then in this direction it should be periodic, right? So when I come here, I should come to this branch. And my chemical potential is at zero. Right, so really you see that I don't have a Fermi surface, but rather I have Fermi points. And so, as a result, pretty much all physical properties would be quite different, right? Such as conductivity and so on. So, but before we proceed to discussing that, so let's ask the following question. So, you know, we've obtained these Dirac points, and we derived this effective Hamiltonian under the assumption that there are only nearest neighbor Hopes, right? In real systems, it's certainly not true, right? There are weak next nearest neighbors Hopes. There are Hopes between different atoms on the A sublattice, different atoms on the B sublattice, right? So let's ask first, before discussing properties, so let's ask, so is this robust, right? Are the Dirac points robust? So we will in a second show that they are in fact robust as long as there is a symmetry between A and B sublattices. Okay. So but first let's show that they're robust under longer range hoppings in the tight binding model. Right. So first consider longer range hops. And let's convince ourselves that they don't remove the Dirac points. So first let's consider, for example, next nearest neighbor Hopes between A and B sublattices. Right. So what are these like? So I have AB. So I could consider Hopes like this, right? So not between nearest neighbors, but between third neighbors, right? So I have three of them, and let's say I could call it T double prime. Okay. So let's check that this leaves the zero energy states at k points in intact, and so and this you can see by just using how the zero energy states at k points transform under threefold rotations. So what do I mean by that? So let me write down the Bloch wave function at the k point. Okay, so let me. So k point Bloch function, wave function on the B sublattice. Right, so it's for nearest neighbor hoppings. This is zero energy. So I could. Of course, I could go by the definition and just write it, you know, as psi of I equals e to the I k r I, right, plus e one, right. But let me actually do something simple. simpler, let me guess it. So let me guess a wave function which would give me a zero energy state, right? So this wave function would be the following. So it would be zero on the A sublattice and I need to pick some amplitudes on the B sublattice. Now, to get a zero energy state, I need to pick them in such a way that if I take three neighbors of a given A site, their amplitudes should add up to zero. Right, so how do I do that? So some amplitudes such that sum of amplitudes for three sites that neighbor one A site should be zero, right? So that I can do as follows. So I can pick, right? So let me pick amplitudes which are roots of unity, right? So let me pick amplitudes one, tau and tau squared, where tau is e to the 2 pi I over 3, right? So these are third degree roots of unity. And let me assign these amplitudes to the B site in such a way that always, you know, such triplets would have one tau and tau squared among them, right? Then I know that the sum of the roots of unity is zero. So then I'm done. So, and you immediately find that you can do that. So you could write, let's say, one tau squared, right? And then you just continue this pattern, right? So let's say here, clearly I should have one, right? Here, clearly I should have tau squared, right? Here I would have tau, right? And so on, right? So I can continue it and you find that at each A site, this condition is satisfied, right? So I've constructed a zero energy state. And, you know, no surprise, you can check that this in fact, this is exactly the Bloch wave function for the K point in the Brillouin zone, right? So, and now I can just go ahead and check that this wave function still remains a zero energy state if I add this nearest neighbor hops, right? So you'll find that from rotational symmetry, if you look at all next nearest neighbors, there would be amplitudes one, tau, and tau squared among them. Right, so their sum is zero. Right, so this tells you that this wave function remains a zero energy state, and you can convince yourself that the same is true if you consider you know, very very long range hops between A and B sites. Right, so this structure, right, that you always have one, and then if you rotate by 120 degrees, you get, let's say, tau squared and then tau, right? It always guarantees you that the sum would be zero. So we've checked this way, we've checked that the K points do not move, right? And okay, velocity might get renormalized, but it's not a big deal. Now, what about hops between A sites and B sites? Right, so it would be, for example, hops like this. A, B, B, A. A, B, right? So I could consider hops like this. We call it T prime. So again, this doesn't change much because as long as sites A and B are exactly the same, right? So my Hamiltonian, these hops are going to give my Hamiltonian the following form. Right, so they would add, what they would do, in addition to the off-diagonal elements that I already have, they will add some diagonal component. But this component will be exactly the same, right, for the two sublattices. And so, and what you would find, right, if you find a spectrum, that spectrum is just shifted by this quantity g of k. Okay, and g of k is a scalar, right? So it's if you Taylor expand it, it's gonna start from the k square term. Right, so there is no way to get a linear contribution here. Okay, so you'll get just k squared, right, and your Dirac points. Right, so you see that this hops between the same sublattice, right? They break particle hole symmetry, right? So now sigma z is no longer anticommutes with the Hamiltonian, right? But the Dirac points still survive, so they might move somewhere, right? They might move, let's say, up, but they're still robust. So now, so how can we break the Dirac points? In particular, how can we introduce a mass, right? So the only way to do that is to break the symmetry between the two sublattices, right? So simplest way to do it is to just say, okay, so let me assume that the onset potential on the two sublattices is different, right? So then, right, so if I break symmetry between A and B, right, let's say I can do that by introducing staggered on-site potential, saying that potential on each A side is, let's say, plus M over 2, and on each B side it's, actually, let me do it without 1/2. Right, so then my Hamiltonian is going to become M minus M, right, T of K, and the spectrum near the K points becomes that of a massive Dirac fermion. Right, so instead of this linear dispersion, I get the dispersion which is looks quadratic here and then becomes linear later on, right, with the gap which is 2m. Okay, so and you can imagine something like this happening. Let's say if you had a material where on A and B sides different atoms were sitting, so there is such a material, so it's boron nitride, right? This have very different on-site potentials, and as a result, this material has looks exactly like that and has a very large band gap. Large band gap, which is of the order of a couple of electron volts, right? So it's a very, very different material. As a result, it's an insulator. So, okay, so now we have an understanding of when these Dirac points are robust, and you know how to give them a mass, and as a next step, let's go back to the physical properties, right? And so, and let's start with, you know, maybe the most important physical property is the conductivity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. So imagine that in order to jump from site A to site B, you have to pay some energy, right? So because there is ultimately, right, what we are talking about, right, that okay, at every site, right, there is some potential, right? So which can trap the electron, right? When you have many atoms nearby, you know, electron can hop between them, right? And you know, you could have a situation when on the neighboring atoms these wells would be of different depth, right? So then you would exactly describe it that there is some offset, right? That this level, let's say, have some energy plus let's say minus m, and this one has energy plus m, right? So in order to hop here, you would have to pay energy 2m, right? So and physically this would occur if, let's say, you know, if somehow, right, these two atoms sitting on A and B sublattices would be inequivalent, right, if they're different atoms. Yes, yes, yes. Essentially, this is the point that as long as, right, as long as A and B are equivalent, right, longer range hoppings and so on, they cannot really remove the Dirac points, right? But if you break this symmetry, right, then you essentially gap out these Dirac points, right, and there is band gap, and you know your Dirac quasi particles become massive. Mm-hmm. Ah, you mean this part, or this part? Ah, okay. So essentially, what I need to check, right? Okay, so I could phrase it differently. So here I try to just convince you that, you know, even if I had longer range hops, right, Bloch state at k equals zero remains a zero energy state. I mean, at the k point, right, at this point, it remains a zero energy state. So, uh-huh. So yes. So, but do you buy that the zero energy state stays? Do you believe that, you know, it remains a zero energy state? So okay, so then all I need to do, right? So clearly, right? If I want to find the exact dispersion relation, I need to repeat this expansion for the long range hops, right? But clearly they would give me, you know, they could renormalize velocity, right? But it would be by some amount proportional to, let's say, T double prime A, right? So as long as T double prime is much less than the nearest neighbor hops, which is of course, you know, very, very natural, right? That the long range hops would be small, right? Then I know that these are just corrections. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now let's think about the conductivity. And so it's actually it's not such a simple question. There are many different regimes and many different approaches of how you could calculate it. And but point is that you always get the same, roughly the same answer up to numerical constants. So let me tell you about two sort of simplest ways to estimate the conductivity. So let's calculate the conductivity. And you know, the challenge here is that, you know, we are used to the Drude formula in which you need to have density of states, right? So the Drude formula tells you that it's a product of density of states and diffusion coefficient, right? The conductivity. But here, of course, because I don't have a Fermi surface, right? But I have a Dirac point, the density of states as a function of chemical potential, right, goes linearly in mu, right? So at mu equals zero, I'm in trouble, right? There are no states to conduct current. That's why, you know, I cannot really apply this formula directly, right? And it's not a priori clear what I should expect for the conductivity. So let me start with the conductivity of clean graphene, right? And how just for an estimate, let me once again apply the Landauer formalism, and let me consider the following situation. So let me consider a sample of graphene, which has width W and length L, and let me attach two ideal leads to it, okay? And calculate, or rather estimate the transmission probability for different modes, and then find the conductance. So let me start with plotting different bands in this region, right? So I can momentum in the transverse direction is quantized, right? So I have allowed values of this momentum which look like that, right? So and this gives me nth mode, and then the dispersion, remaining dispersion, kx n, that equals hv Fermi square root kx squared plus pn over w squared. Right, so this tells you that this one-dimensional channels which propagate are all gapped, right? And of course I have electron and hole bands here. They're all gapped, right, with a gap that is given. So I have many such bands from n equal 1 to infinity. And for the nth channel, this gap is given by HVF pi n over W, right? Now, so what does this mean? This means that for each mode, graphene appears as a classically forbidden region, right? Because I send them at zero energy from the leads, right? And they need to tunnel through this classically forbidden region. And I can estimate the tunneling probability quasi-classically, right? So I know that probability for the nth mode to tunnel through is just an exponential of the minus action, right? So which would be given by kx dx. I can estimate that the kx should be given by the, it would be imaginary, right? But it would be equal to ky in the absolute value, right? So it would be minus 1 over h absolute value of ky n times times the length, right, of this path, so which is just L. And this becomes and okay, H should go right if I want to keep dimensions right. Right, so you see that this is what I get, right? And then by the Landauer formula, right, to get the conductance, is it clear what's written there? Is it clear? Oh, okay. So I can, yeah, because it's in the corner. So let me rewrite it. So let me estimate quasi-classical transmission probability. So it would be exponential, right, minus essentially absolute value of kx under the barrier times the length, right? And I know that the absolute value of kx under the barrier should be essentially given by the momentum by the transverse momentum, right? So then I get that this is exponential minus pi n over W L, right? So this is my answer. And now to get conductance, I know that it's just E squared over H sum of the transmission probabilities over different channels. So this is a bit tricky. Yeah, so in principle, here it depends a little bit on the type of boundary condition, actually. What are the allowed values of n, right? So and for certain boundary conditions, indeed you can get a mode which is propagating at zero energy, right? But you know, for a rough estimate, so let's assume generic boundary condition, right, where all the channels are gapped, right? So let's assume that boundary condition is such that n starts from one. Because all we need from this is a very rough estimate. Right, so this becomes E squared over H e to the minus pi L over W, one plus e to the minus pi L over W. Right, so and you see that if I consider a roughly square sample or a sample with similar dimensions, right, similar linear dimensions, you would see that the conductance, right, is of the order of E squared over H. Right, so when L of the order W, conductance is of the order of E squared over H. So this is the conductivity of clean graphene, right? So now you can ask what happens if you add disorder. And so it turns out that disorder actually cannot change it too much, right? So let's add disorder and let's do a very simple estimate. So this estimate is not going to be rigorous, but if you do a more rigorous analysis, it actually you find that this estimate is correct, right? So let's now add disorder. So what disorder is gonna do? Disorder will locally change your chemical potential, right? Somewhere it would be positive, somewhere it would be negative, and self-consistently, right? You would introduce some carriers in your system. So they would be a mixture of electrons and holes, right? So, but essentially, disorder, right, introduces some carriers. And we can estimate, so we can estimate the typical chemical potential induced by disorder very simply. Right, so you could say that energy of the carrier that you introduce should be, by the uncertainty principle, should be H over scattering time on this disorder, okay? So, and then, you know, once you have scatterers, at least in the lowest order, you could apply your Drude formula, right? And you could say that, okay, so my density of states for this density of carriers would be simply this, right? So I can and then diffusion coefficient is given by the V Fermi squared tau over 2. So in this case, I get that sigma is of the order of E squared nu times diffusion coefficient, right? So becomes E squared epsilon star V Fermi squared H bar, H without bar, times V Fermi squared tau over 2. And so these guys cancel out, and this ones would give me H bar, right? So which probably means that I lost H factor of H somewhere, but that's okay. So we know from dimensionality that it should be squared over H. Okay, so again we found, right, that even with disorders, the conductivity of graphene is of the order of E squared over H. And quite remarkably, it does not depend on the strength of disorder, right? So here completely the impurity concentration, disorder scattering time completely dropped out, right? So, you know, from our previous discussion about localization, you could expect that this is a very poor conductor, right, with a dimensionless conductance of order 1, right? So it should localize like crazy, right? So that it should really go insulating and show very non-ohmic behavior, right? So but turns out that this is not the case, and so but this will continue at 3. So this discussion will continue at 3. So if you guys have any questions about the stuff so far, so please ask. So we'll get that. We'll get to that. So if you've seen it in some high energy class, you know, it makes sense. That's good. If not, don't worry. You know, we will consider it later in some more detail. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other question? You guys look like you need some coffee, so make sure to get some before the 3 p.m. It's not quantized, right? So here, of course, there is some numerical factor, right? Which is, in fact, non-universal, right? But important thing is that it really, you know, whatever you do, right, it stays close to this value of V squared over H. Yes. So normally, right, if you are dealing with a normal conductor, right, if you see a conductor with such conductivity, you know that it's almost insulating, right? That it's essentially it's going insulating very soon, right? But here it turns out it's not the case, and as you increase the scale, graphene can stay in this, right, with this value of conductance, and we will understand the reasons for that at 3 p.m.